Chapter 6. A soldier lay dying in Algiers.
If I am going to drown, if I am going to drown, why in the name of the seven mad gods who rule the sea was I allowed to come thus far and contemplate sand and trees?
During this terrible night, one would say that it really was the intention of the seven mad gods to drown him, despite the cruel injustice of it. Yes, it was certainly a cruel injustice to drown a man who had worked so hard. The man felt it would be a most unnatural crime. Other people had drowned at sea since the beginning of sailing, but still. When it occurs to a man that nature does not regard him as important and that his disposal means nothing to the universe, he at first wishes to show defiance to God and the universe, and he deeply hates the fact that there is no immediate way to show this. Any visible display of nature would surely feel his attack. Then, if there be no tangible thing to attack, he perhaps feels the desire to beg on one knee and ask for mercy. A high, cold star on a winter's night is the response he feels that she would give. Then he knows the sadness of his situation. The men in the dinghy had not discussed these matters, but each had, no doubt, reflected upon them in silence and according to his mind. There was rarely any look except complete tiredness displayed on their faces. Conversation was devoted to the matter of the boat. To sound the notes of his emotion, lines from a poem mysteriously entered the correspondent's head. He'd even forgotten that he had forgotten these lines, but they suddenly were in his mind. A soldier lay dying in Algiers. There was a lack of woman's nursing. There was a lack of woman's tears. But an army brother stood beside him, and he took that brother's hand, saying, "I shall never see my own, my native land." In his childhood, the correspondent had been familiar with the fact that a soldier lay dying in Algiers, but he had never regarded the fact as important. Many of his schoolfellows had informed him of the soldier's difficult situation, but he had never considered it his affair that a soldier lay dying in Algiers. Nor had it appeared to him as a matter for sadness. It was less to him than breaking a pencil's point. Now, however, it appropriately came to him as a human, living thing. It was no longer merely lines from a poet's creation. It was a reality, stern, sad, and beautiful. The correspondent plainly saw the soldier. He lay on the sand with his feet out straight and still. While his pale left hand was upon his chest in an attempt to stop death, the blood came between his fingers. The correspondent, working the oars and dreaming of the slow and slower movements of the lips of the soldier, was moved by a deep understanding. He was sorry for the soldier who lay dying in Algiers. The thing which had followed the boat and waited had evidently grown bored at the delay. There was no longer the sound of cut water, and there was no longer the flame of the long trail. The light in the north still shined, but it was apparently no nearer to the boat. Sometimes the boom of the surf rang in the correspondent's ears, and he turned the craft toward the sea and rowed harder. Southward, someone had evidently built a watchfire on the beach. It was too low and too far to be seen, but it made a shining, red reflection upon the bluff behind it, and this could be seen from the boat. The wind came stronger, and sometimes a wave suddenly jumped out like a mountain cat. The captain moved on his water jar and sat straight.
"Pretty long night," he observed to the correspondent.
He looked at the shore.
"Those life-saving people take their time."
"Did you see that shark playing around?"
"Yes, I saw him. He was a big fellow, all right."
"Wish I had known you were awake." Later, the correspondent spoke into the bottom of the boat.
"Billy!"
There was a slow and gradual movement.
"Billy, will you take over for me?"
"Sure," said the oiler.
As soon as the correspondent touched the cold, comfortable seawater in the bottom of the boat, he was deep in sleep, despite the fact that it was freezing cold. His sleep was so good that it seemed only a moment had passed before he heard a voice call his name in a tone that demonstrated the last stages of exhaustion.
"Will you take over for me?"
"Sure, Billy."
The light in the north had mysteriously disappeared, but the correspondent took his course from the captain. Later in the night, they took the boat farther out to sea, and the captain directed the cook to take one oar at the stern and keep the boat facing the seas. He was to call out if he should hear the roar of the surf. This plan enabled the oiler and the correspondent to get rest.
"We'll give those boys a chance to get into shape again," said the captain.
They lay down and, after shivering a bit, slept once more the dead sleep. Neither knew they had passed along to the cook the company of another shark, or perhaps the same shark.